I've been away for a few weeks on holidays, and I really appreciate that, but I don't know whether it's just me this morning or maybe the heat, but I have to say, you smell.
Thank you.
You and I, we smell. We smell good. Now, I don't know, maybe it's just me, and you might want to check with the people around you, but you smell good to me. Whether you smell good to each other, whether you smell good to the person beside you, you have to kind of work that out afterwards. Whether you smell good to those around you, to me, to others, is really up to you. Because as you'll see after we take a look at our inspiration today, you both smell good and smell bad at the same time. It's a truth from the Word of God. You smell good and you smell bad. So just accept it. That's part of your humanity. When we think of aroma or fragrance or bouquet or odor or stink, you might think, oh, it's just somewhat subjective. But you'd be amazed. So as we look at the backdrop throughout this month of spiritual potpourri, I always struggle with that word, spiritual potpourri. So how do we say this word? Please help me out here. Potpourri? Potpourri. Spiritual potpourri. You might think that's a strange thing to put together, and I hope that at least the picture up here this month, this, at the front, makes you think of good scents. S-C-E-N-T-S. It's good scents. Because it is one of the most mysterious, it is the most mysterious of your five senses. And as we think of the backdrop of our sense of smell, the Bible actually talks about smell. This sense that God has given us. We're going to pursue this, and throughout the Bible, there are contexts in which smell is used. They're fairly rare, but the earliest point in the Bible in which the sense of smell is deployed is a very interesting scene. Let me set it up, or let me give you the picture, the scene. First time scent or aroma or smell is mentioned in the Bible, something had gone terribly wrong, like monumentally wrong. It's found in Genesis 6, if you want to look it up. It says this, God saw how wicked humanity had become. Evil, all the time, every inclination of it. And God regretted that he made humans. His heart was deeply troubled, and he decided he's going to start all over again. There's just incredible mystery, challenge in that scene. But God decided to start over, and one man amongst them all was righteous, Noah. Any of you familiar with the story of Noah and the ark? And God had a plan, and he told Noah, this righteous man, his plan about how he was going to save humanity. And so he then shared with Noah how to build this strange vessel that had never been seen before on the earth. It was huge. Build this ark. As you read through the story, you see God actually helped him out. God helped him to build this ark. He was to fill it with every kind of animal, a mystery in itself. He was to fill it with seven pairs of clean animals. And the day came in which they all came, the animals and his family, and filled the ark. And then the rain came, and the waters came. It says the waters came from the sky and from the ground, came from everywhere, and lifted that ark up. And for a year and 10 days, Noah was suspended above the earth, with the flood waters destroying everything below it. So we get to 8, verse 16, if you have your Bibles with you. And God said to Noah, come out of the ark, you and your family and all the animals, so they can multiply on the earth, be fruitful, increase in numbers. That was what he said. And so this is where we can pick up on what God was doing. And we read this, you can read this with me. So Noah came out, together with his sons and his wife and his sons' wives, all the animals and all the creatures that move along the ground, all the birds. Everything that moves on land came out of the ark, one kind after another. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and taking some of the clean animals and clean birds, he sacrificed burnt offerings on it. Wow. Just think of it. Imagine you're one of Noah's family members. New life, new opportunity. God didn't forget them. And something they'd never seen before, an earth of ocean that carried them for a year and 10 days. The movie, if you've seen it, struggles with these concepts. Some of them, they fail in terms of their presentation, I believe. But it's mystifying to think of this whole thing. It's new life. And Noah's sacrifice, Noah's choice when he comes out of the ark, is to make an altar and take some of those animals and kill them and sacrifice them and burn them. And it says this. Please read me. The Lord smelled the pleasing aroma and said in his heart, "Never again will I curse the ground because of humans, even though every inclination of the human heart is evil from childhood. And never again will I destroy all living creatures as I have done." Wow. Noah builds this altar, sacrifices clean animals, and the fire rises to God. And it says this statement: the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma, and his response, "I won't do this again." Even though humans still carry with them evil from childhood, I won't do it again. So, I guess the question is, what did God smell? Does God have a nose like us? Does God have a sense of smell like us? Does God like the smell of animals being killed and sacrificed? It would seem so. But some things that I want you to consider. First, God did not instruct Noah to do this. There was no place in which God said, after building an ark of precision and telling him the dates in which it would happen and asking him to come out of the ark, he didn't then say, "Now take some of those animals and sacrifice them to me." It's not found in there. So we have to wonder, is this Noah's choice? Certainly God did not need to eat. That wasn't what it was about. And of course, when we think of it, after Noah's relationship with God and his relationship and his family members, these animals were his most valuable possession. They were his sustenance. They were his survival. And he chooses to sacrifice them. Third thing that's interesting to consider is we really don't know how the animals felt. Oh, I know in our society today we assume that we can humanize animals and put ourselves into their places, but that's conjecture at best. It's inaccurate to do so. So, what did God really smell? And why did it please him so much? Why did it please him so much that perhaps beyond better judgment, you know, see, every time you see injustice in the world, maybe you think God should step in, right? So maybe beyond better judgment, God committed to withhold total destruction from the face of the earth because of this aroma. Let me suggest something. Let me suggest that Noah, his family's profound thanksgiving and appreciation and love led them to totally give up that which was most valuable to them as they sought, in a stumbling, kind of confused way, that they wanted to keep a relationship with this one who had saved them. And they did whatever they thought they could even though they knew that evil was still in their hearts. You can read on and see what else Noah did after this event. You can see that evil is still there. In other words, Noah's heart, his family's hearts, as they gathered around and praised God in thanksgiving with the best that they had, it smelled good to God. Their worship and their praise smelled good. And perhaps this is what God knew going forward. Perhaps God knew this. He knew that our willingness to give up that which we hold as valuable so that we can acknowledge our relationship with Him always trumps that which we originally had. That's the purest relationship we can have with Him. When we're willing to give up that which we hold as the dearest to God, we're actually acknowledging that God's more valuable than that. And God knew that, I think. And this concept is used going forward as God leads His people. And a phrase comes up in Leviticus. A phrase comes up over and over again, and the phrase is, an aroma pleasing to the Lord. An aroma pleasing to the Lord. Well, what is the context? What is the aroma pleasing to the Lord? Throughout the Hebrew law and the sacrificial system and temple worship, all throughout this plan that God had through Leviticus and Exodus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, through the Sabbath and the Passover and the festivals of weeks and atonement and tabernacles, God says, this is how you can have aroma that's pleasing to me. This is just one part of it that we can read together. This is what you are to offer on the altar regularly each day. Two lambs a year old. Offer one in the morning and the other at twilight. A pleasing aroma, a food offering presented to the Lord. For generations to come, this burnt offering is to be made regularly at the entrance to the tent of meeting before the Lord. There I will meet you. There I will speak with you. There also I will meet with the Israelites, and the place will be consecrated by my glory. We see this phrase here. Let me just pose a few questions. Although God gave the instructions, does He really need these offerings? No. He needs nothing. In fact, as you read in this, many of the times the food that was sacrificed was actually food for the priests. If I can use the word, it was barbecue. It was to provide for people. It was to provide for the priests. So God took that which was offered to Him and handed it over to the priests. As you read through that. Second, in context, as you read alongside, you kind of have to try to put yourself back into the times that were there. In context of all the other sacrificial systems of the day, Molech, Ashtoreth, Baal, in which at some points you sacrificed your children to these gods, God's sacrificial system was the most humane, the most gracious. And indeed, He said He would respond to it. You can see in verse 42. There I will meet with them. There I'll meet and speak with you and meet with the Israelites. God said He would respond. When you compare it to other sacrificial systems in which people would sacrifice almost everything they had with no response from their God. God's laying out something that makes sense. And to this new nation, because this law was given in the context of nomadic Hebrew people who traveled across the desert, their most valuable possession was what God asked them to give. What did God smell? What was this aroma pleasing to the Lord? Why was the sacrifice from a people who were insignificant in the day, who were poor, who complained about food a lot, and God provided for them every single morning? Manna in the desert. Quail that came in off the sea. You see, God provided for them. It was in part, why was this a pleasing aroma to Him? Well, let me suggest this. God gave guidance to the people He chose. He chose them how to respond with proper thanksgiving and appreciation and love to help them understand His worth his love for them. Through the sacrifice, he countered the evil that they, that I, that you are prone to. Oh, it doesn't, in the day of the Israelites, it doesn't eradicate it totally, but it begins the process when we make sacrifices. Their worship, their praise smelled good. And what's his commitment? Let's read this. Then I will dwell among the Israelites and be their God. They will know that I am the Lord their God who brought them out of Egypt so that I might dwell among them. I am the Lord their God. His promise, consider the other sacrificial systems of the day, his promise was to be with them, that his glory would be in the temple, that he would provide for them in the context of the desert as they wandered through it. Water, manna, quail, as I mentioned. He'd provide for them. What was he asking of them? To give their best. Because that's what he's worth. And that was the aroma pleasing to God. So maybe you're wondering, as 21st century Gentiles, for the most part, what do we do with this? What do we do with this? Well, let me just pause for a moment. Let me pause to mention a few things about our olfactory system. I mean, maybe to help you with your appreciation of the sense of smell that you have. Your nose is an amazing thing. It is the most amazing sense that you have. Oh, it's highly hidden. No one can see it like your ears or your eyes. But your olfaction is one of the most brilliant senses. You could say it's the unappreciated genius. It's the distinguished professor. It's the brilliant technician amongst our senses. The eyes, perhaps, are the doorways to the soul, and the ears master language and communication, and our five tastes distinguish what we eat to know if it's good for us. Our touch covers our whole body, but our nose, your sense of smell is the expert. Study was done this year. Study was done in Rockefeller University, and it was found that a human person, yourself, can detect over 1 trillion smells. 1 trillion. Another study was done recently in which the nerve cells that go between the receptors in your sense of smell to your brain goes past your thalamus, right to your brain, unlike any other sense. And it's renewed every 30 to 60 days. Your body replaces your sense of smell. That's how valuable it is to them. The top smells that we appreciate as human beings, vanilla, orange, cinnamon, cookies. We can even detect fear and disgust. Humans can detect who is related to them and who is not by the sense of smell. Our own scent is so unique that one study suggested that it be used in bank machines because it's as unique as fingerprints. If a bank machine could actually know your scent, they would know exactly who you are. It's brilliant. It is, by the recent tests, still a mystery because scientists aren't sure how your sense of smell works. They still haven't come up with a theory to fully spell out how it works. Our sense of taste is largely determined by our sense of smell. Think of it. If you can detect 1 trillion different scents and your taste can only detect 5 different tastes, it's your nose that's helping you with flavor more than your tongue. When we look at the animal world, dogs can smell by accuracy and discernment 100,000 times more than human beings can. Bloodhounds can scent a human trail 2 days old. Bears are even stronger in their sense of smell. They can smell underground scents to know where to dig. And when they find something that they like, even if it's 18 miles away, they can smell it. Fish have a combination between their sense of smell and sense of taste, and it takes them back to where they were born, through the waters. Amongst catfish, they determine their hierarchy by their sense of smell. Even plants have been found to have a sense of smell Some plants, when they smell an animal close by, change the chemical that they excrete so that the animal doesn't like them. The sense of smell is an incredible thing. I know it's kind of limited in our world in terms of how much we use it, but when I shared those things with you because you are fearfully and wonderfully made. So when we look at what God has to say about even the sense of smell, but what God has to say about his relationship with you, he's keenly desirous to make sure that you know it because of your brilliance. How do we respond to this then? Well, Christ's great sacrifice, let me go back. Christ's great sacrifice changes everything. The former testament, the former covenant has been fulfilled by Christ. He fulfills God's plan and changes it at the same time. Paul, writing to Corinthians, he talks about how we should respond in life to challenging situations, the evil that's amongst us, and he tells us that we should forgive and comfort. We should reaffirm our love, be obedient in everything that God asks us to do, because that way Satan won't outwit us. He continues to write as he writes to the church, and he says this, "Thanks be to God." You can read with me if you want. "Thanks be to God who always leads us as captives in Christ's triumphal procession and uses us to spread the aroma of the knowledge of him everywhere. For we are to God the pleasing aroma of Christ amongst those who are being saved and those who are perishing." Do you know that you actually can be an evangelist by how you smell? Seems to be what the text is telling us. Before Christ came, as we read, God accepted proper praise from humans by giving their best in sacrifice and humility and thanksgiving. These were acts of will to acknowledge God's character, his value, and his work, to confess our evil. When Christ came, he made up the huge difference that the Bible talks about that still remains, because the sacrifice of an animal does not cover our sin. It's representative. It helps us in terms of understanding the value of God, but it does not pay the price. It does not fully change us. Christ came to make up the huge difference caused by our sin and our evil, and he became the sacrifice. He became the aroma pleasing God forever. He did what was required, and he opened up a way for us to know God so that we can smell like Christ. So we can smell pleasing to God as well. So we can be in the sacrifice pleasing to God. Not just offering it, to be in it. It's an incredible concept. It's an incredible reality that we can be in the sacrifice and still be alive. But that's what Christ extends to us. And Paul says, we are the pleasing aroma to Christ. You've experienced this in various ways already. Just let me remind you of perhaps a situation in which you were connecting with a business person, or perhaps at work, or maybe in your family. And as you interact with them, things are all fine. And then they ask the question, "And so what do you do?" And you tell them, and then you get into what you believe, and you say, "I'm a Christian." And all of a sudden, you don't smell so good. You didn't really say anything to them. But all of a sudden, you smell different. Or perhaps if you've had experiences like I had when I went to Thailand, interact with people that I could not speak their language, and went to the church the very first time, and as we praised God in a language I had no idea of, we all smelled good. We delighted to be with each other. You can cross cultures with the aroma that's pleasing to God. Those that have gone from our congregation to other to Africa and other places around the world have experienced this, no doubt, in which you feel the presence of God with you even though you can't communicate with people around you. It's a pleasing aroma. When we accept God's grace and love and his glorious perfume of salvation, we smell different. We don't even have to use words sometimes. It's just our attitude. Paul continues And he says this, to the one we are an aroma that brings death, to the other an aroma that brings life. Why do we smell? We smell because we're making a claim, even just by our presence or by our words or by our witness, that we believe in a way that pleases God, that we cannot pay for ourselves, that through faith brings us before God through humility. And that's Christ. And some people hate that smell because they want to do it themselves. They think they can do it themselves. Or they don't even care. But you still smell. Let me just mention these few questions or things to keep in mind. God needs nothing from us. There's nothing he requires. There's nothing that makes his life better because of us. And there's nothing that makes his life worse because of us, if I can use those words. Giving all that we have, the best we have, all that we have in exchange for what he gives us isn't a deal for him. It's for us. It's a deal for him because it fulfills the love that he extends to us. But ultimately, it's for your good that you accept his sacrifice and you become aroma for him. And our most valuable possession, those of you that are younger, that maybe haven't started your career yet, you will find things that come to you that you will think, wow, that's a blessing. That's a value to me. That's the most important thing that I have. A title, an education, a career. Nothing we have that we value is too much to give in exchange for what he offers us. Because the brilliance is, as we offer it to him, he refines it and makes it even more pleasant for others in the lives that we live. In the face of our aptitude for evil, for stink, for trouble, there is a cleansing. There is a beautification. There is a perfume that makes us pleasant to God. And it's through the blood of Christ. He offers us a way that even though the world finds us and Christ repugnant at times, even though there'll be people that when you say, I'm a Christian, I attend a Baptist church, will decide they don't want to have a relationship with you. In the church, amongst those who seek him, our worship and our praise and our living smells good. Smells good to God as aroma pleasing to each other. Keep smelling good.